If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Dominic Swentoski. I'm the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. Welcome to episode 9 of season 9 on the Troutbitten Podcast. I have the full crew of guys with me tonight, and we're here to talk about bad habits that hold you back. All right, before we get going, just a couple updates here from the Troutbitten world. First, thanks for your most recent comments on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We asked for them, you delivered, and it makes a difference. Cheers, everyone. Keep them coming. A simple positive comment and great rating is an easy way to support this project. Right after Thanksgiving, we had our Troutbitten Fall Leader Sale. Things went fast again. Thank you very much. Mono rigs sold out in a couple days. We do have inventory of Harvey Dry Leaders and hats. Again, the apparel and the stickers are always there for you too. Lastly, I spent a ton of time improving the recommended gear section on Troutbitten. Everything is updated and expanded. Instead of just one page, it's now 9 separate pages and categories, with not just my favorite stuff, but a lot of great recommendations from the guys that you hear on this podcast as well. It's a good list. It's a big list. You can Google that recommended gear page or simply find it in the Troutbitten top menu under Shop. Thanks again for all your support. Now, we say this all the time, everything works sometimes, right? And that's one of the cool things about fishing for trout. There are a bunch of great ways to accomplish the same thing, the same goal of putting trout in the net. And even when it comes to a certain style of fishing, like fishing dry flies, there are plenty of leader designs and casting concepts that will get your dry fly in one lane riding through a pretty long dead drift, if that's the goal. And it's that personal style, that freedom to make choices about your own preferences, to be creative within your own technique, that is so attractive about fly fishing. But that is not what any of this is about. No, we're here to talk about bad habits, things that aren't a style, but are just bad form, bad choices. These are bad habits that come with a consequence. These are quite simply mistakes. And in every case, as we'll discuss, there's a much better way to do things. So we're thinking tonight kind of from a guide's perspective. 4 of us here guide professionally, but all of us have guided friends and family as well. And at Troutbitten, most of our guests are accomplished anglers, good fishermen who realize that they know a lot, but understand there's a lot more to know. So we're teaching guides and not tour guides. That's what makes guiding fun for us, honestly. And along the way, as we meet anglers from all over the country and the world, we often see these bad habits, what I call deal breakers, from good anglers. And inevitably, these are some of the key things that hold people back from going further, from catching more trout. Deal breakers, right? Not personal style, not, oh, this is just the way I like to do it, and it's not that bad. But habits that come with consequences, and habits that, once changed, open up new avenues and better opportunities. All right, one more thing before we get going. Our intention here is to be helpful and not critical. We want to point out some of the worst habits that we see most often, the mistakes that a lot of good anglers still make and that hold them back. And these are mistakes. It's almost right and wrong. I'm also sure that as a group, we won't agree on all of this. We rarely do. We might have a couple of these bad habits ourselves, especially the ones that come from inattention or impatience. The point is, I always say there are no experts in fly fishing, so we are not experts. But all of us here are experienced. In fact, we're experienced enough to have gone through many of these bad habits on our own and have corrected them. So our goal is to share a few of these habits and highlight what might go unnoticed by a pretty wide segment of our friends. All right, we're skipping listener questions tonight so we can pack as many of these bad habits into 1 hour as possible. Guys, full house tonight. Are we ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Are you ready?
Dr. Trevor Smith is ready.
Let's get ready
Matt's
to
singing.
Rumble.
Austin's got the WWE.
Oh, yeah, dang it.
There's Bill. Josh is waking up.
We're ready.
He's there.
Wasn't that,
go ahead.
Wasn't that Triple H?
Oh, you ready?
It's been a while since we brought it.
Yeah.
Brought in the WWE.
Mustn't forget.
Matt, best wrestler of all time.
Ultimate Warrior.
Best. That's the most complete. Oh. Bill doesn't think so. Bill, not your favorite, but like the best. The best wrestler ever. Come on, Bill.
He was pretty athletic, Bill.
That should be on the tip
of
your
tongue. Are you asking pure wrestler? Best. Or like...
I mean, Kurt Angle was the best pure wrestler.
Yeah.
Dude won a freaking gold medal.
Angle.
It's true.
Specific. Yeah, I was going to say Kurt Angle. There's a nice documentary of him on Peacock.
Why is it not like Hulk Hogan? Isn't he the best? Or is he just the most well-known?
He wasn't a good wrestler, but he was a good entertainer. That's why I ask if you're...
I mean, when you drop a leg on someone's neck, that's your... That's your finishing
it's your signature move.
You can't be the best wrestler.
Anybody else on that one?
No.
I got nothing.
I don't know anything.
It's beneath
this
Trevor.
Podcast Dr. is the Trevor extent Smith. Of my knowledge.
I know. Well,
we'll have to have a side podcast on wrestling.
Skill series.
Skill series.
All right. That's enough of that. You guys want to dig into this? Let's start off with a good one. What do you have? What bad habits that hold you back? What do you have?
Poor knot tying.
Here's Dr. Trevor Smith. There he is.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've talked about this one before, but I just think it's poor knot tying will hamper your ability to change rigs, tie on flies. It'll make you not want to change flies. It will lead to all sorts of inefficiencies and other bad habits in your fishing. So it feels to me like there's very few excuses. May I say no excuse for not being a good knot tier, because you just, it's one of those bread and butter essentials of fly fishing that you just have to get good at. And so you don't need to know every single knot under the sun, but you need to know a few. And there's articles on your site about this. We've talked about it before. You can boil it down to probably 3 knots that you could learn, that you could do almost everything that you need to do with. But man, no excuse for not getting better at those.
So what's the bad habit?
The bad habit is not practicing your knot.
Yeah, probably, right?
I'm guilty of this, though, from being too confident. Sometimes I'll tie a knot fast, like the clinch knot. Like if you don't take that extra second, wet it, and kind of just like slowly cinch it in and just do it really fast, it'll burn your line. And then, you know, you're in a hurry and then fish eats and you break it off. And so I'm guilty of that one.
That's a bad habit in itself.
It's a bad habit.
Trying to rush through something. Sometimes you get everything stuck in a tree. You have to rebuild whatever it is. And to rush through it, not having the discipline to say, all right, hold on, do this clean, and then it'll be quick. We had an episode, season 3, episode 2, The Inefficiencies That Waste Your Fishing Time. We definitely talked about knot tying in that one. Like if you can't tie knots, you're going to be really held back. Bad habit. What else?
Something I see a good bit is when we're talking about tight line nymphing on a mono rig, not landing with contact is a big one. A lot of folks have the bad habit of making the cast and dropping their leader on the water and then picking that leader up and then trying to sustain or create a drift after the fact. And to break that habit and to actually stick the landing and to stay in contact from the get-go can be a really difficult thing to overcome, but something we should strive to do in most scenarios.
Yeah, you and I have talked about that so much. You've seen the same thing, Bill.
Yeah.
All of us, we guided a lot of tight line style. That's what people want to learn the most. And it's awesome. That's why 2 years ago, you and I walked through the 9 essential skills.
Right.
The first 4 or maybe 5 have everything to do with casting. And you pointed out that they all kind of happen within like 1 second, you know? Yeah. Right. You need to get turnover,
quick
and
succession.
Stick the landing, you know? But you said it then, like dropping the line on the water in that case and then picking it up, it's a mistake. And people will do it all day long. Mm-hmm. Mistake, correction, mistake, correction. That's a habit. And there are a lot of things like that when we're out there fishing that you can look at if you're objective about what you're seeing, or if you're just watching your buddy fish and you can go, man, he keep doing that over and over.
Yeah.
That's just hurting you over and over. And sometimes we don't see it in our own fishing, but we can see it in others.
So I would say one of the most consistent issues or bad habits that I see with the majority of folks I take fishing is consistent drag-free drifts. And what I mean by consistent, I think everybody at times can wade up a stream and haphazardly get into a spot where they can get good drifts. Mm-hmm. But I think consistency is really, really important. And I make an effort to tell my clients that I'm fishing with, like, look, focus on the drag-free drift is challenging throughout the day. And it's complex, right? Because you're constantly moving around. You're constantly battling complex currents. And
not to mention wind
you can lose focus on that drag-free drift with all the other stuff going on, with casting and the knot tying and the fly selection, right? But I would say out of all that's important, but maybe not as important as the drag-free drift.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a little tip I try to remind folks is to stay focused, is to look at the river itself and look at the bubbles floating down and or a leaf floating down. And a lot of times that's kind of the same speed you want to have that drag-free drift at, right? And if you lose focus, you'll see the thingamabobber will move quicker than that. The dry fly will move quicker than that, or even the sighter.
Can come across seams.
Move quicker, slower. You know, there's a lot of distractions out there, and that one for me is a bad habit people get into and forgetting to concentrate on that.
You're saying lose focus and forgetting to concentrate, but I also think it's a bad habit that I see related to the drag free drift is people just start to accept it and they'll say, that's pretty good.
Sure.
And that's not that bad. I'm like, it's bad. If your goal is a drag-free drift, then it's bad when it's not drag-free. It's hard to do. Like
you're saying, it's not bad. It's probably really bad.
Yeah, right. That's not bad.
If you don't,
yes, it is.
If you're judging it that way, you're probably a problem.
Yeah,
but I think it's that, and it's that context, Dom, on like signaling what's bad. I don't know if they understand that. Like without having to, like they might get it, but they don't really. Like retain that and focus on that. Back to my focus thing. It's like, no, you got to focus on that really, really, you know, hard. We take it for granted, but I mean, there's times when, not to jump around, but when we talk about when things are slow, that's one of the first things I do is focus on the drift. And we've talked about that, right?
Sure.
Concentrate on the drift because a lot of times that's probably the root of the problem.
That's what it is. That's where everything.
Yeah.
You're trying to present it the right way. What's the right way? In this case, we're talking about a dead drift. If it's off, if it's not really a dead drift, then you don't even know if you can move on. You don't even know if you should try the next seam or try a different fly or whatever, because you haven't even achieved what you were setting out to do.
Right.
I feel like one of the first things that goes when you're working towards trying to get a drag-free drift and when you're trying to move throughout a day and trying to focus on that drag-free drift the way you're talking about, Matt, is the footwork. And that's one of those things that leads to like a drift that is full of drag. Is there's a lot of problems with lazy footwork.
Yeah.
One of them being spooking trout, and we can get into that. But one of the biggest things is it leads to you casting a lot farther than you should be casting. And that's one of the biggest offenders of in your attempts of getting a drag-free drift is casting farther across seams than you need to.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So that bad footwork is a bad habit. That's right.
Bad habit. And casting while moving. man, is it, yeah. if there's something that's tempting about that. I do it all the time and catch myself like, what am I doing? I can't focus.
We talked about that
focus.
One other time. I don't mind casting while moving. I don't necessarily want to drift while moving. But you pointed out that if you're nymph and if you have a suspender on, that you can move while you're drifting.
That's true.
Remember that? When you talked about that, I was like, that's a pretty cool point, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not tracking toward your rod tip. Your rod tip isn't necessarily affecting it when you have a suspender on. You can do the same thing with a dry fly. When I'm covering brookie streams, or if I'm saying like backcountry, kind of mountain water, I like to go real fast. There'll be lots of times when I'm casting and moving. Let's assume the water isn't like terribly low and the fish are super spooky or something. That's where I find like I'm moving up through. If it's wide enough, let's say 20, 30 feet, I like to get in the middle and just kind of keep going up, and I'm definitely moving while I'm casting, while I'm drifting. But I don't know. You kind of do it with some purpose and with some forethought. You kind of get in the zone. You're not even thinking about it. But Josh, I think that's a great point. The bad habit is not moving enough.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what your style of fishing is. It could be dry flies, streamers, whatever. We need to move. A spin fisherman can kind of stand on the bank and cover a whole bunch of water. And if you come from that experience, from that background, you really do need to form new habits around, well, the limitations of a fly rod. You're not casting at that, not effectively. And the presentations now that we're trying to get, and especially drag-free drifts, can only happen when you do decide, okay, I have to move. I have to move those feet. That's a good one. I hadn't thought about that.
Another one I think I'm guilty of a lot is just poor organization. And I think, you know, I have periods of time where I get reorganized. And then particularly, I would say, like with my flies, I just, over the season, I don't get the time or take the time to make sure that my organization stays consistent. And so by the end of the season, it's not uncommon for me to have a lot of disorganization in terms of where my flies are in the box, what section they're in, having two or three boxes with kind of a mix match of flies across them because I've kind of taken flies out and put them in a different place. And it's really, there's no good excuse for it. You know, I say it's lack of time, and that's what I blame it on, is just that I get home, I dump my bag, I'm in with the kids. I don't ever revisit it until the next time I'm going out. And as I'm going out, I'm like, oh gosh, I've just remembered that I didn't reorganize after last time. But it leads to a lot of lost time on the water because I'm searching for things and I end up, you know, wasting my own time fishing. So I know it's a bad habit that I need to keep working on.
You remember an article I wrote called All the Things.
Yeah.
That's all the things that you need to do besides just fishing, just to keep up with the things that you're talking about right there. This week I had three different things break on me and I had to fix all three of them. I just fixed my net bag. I went through some brush and actually the thread, you know, that holds the bag on. That's a pretty sturdy thread.
That is sturdy.
But whatever, it got cut and all of a sudden half my bag is, you know, coming off. So I fixed it on the stream as much as I could for the day, but just now, before we logged on, I fixed that up. It's one thing after the other when you're fishing a lot that you kind of have to keep up with.
It's true.
As fly anglers and tires, we understand the value of having the right tool for the job. AvidMax.com offers over 20,000 products and the knowledge to help you find the right tool for your job, whether that be at the tying bench or on the water. Listeners of the Trout Bitten Podcast receive a special one-time discount code at AvidMax.com. Enter the code TB10 at checkout on full-priced items to save 10% off your order. Orders over $25 ship for free, so you can put more gas in your tank or beer in your cooler. For all things fly fishing and tying, elevate your game with AvidMax. For over a decade, Smith Creek's high-quality fly fishing accessories have helped anglers just like you to keep your gear in easy reach, free up your hands, and keep our waters clean. Their award-winning Rod Clip Plus now has two ways to attach it to your vest or pack, making it easier to tie a fly, change a hook, or release your catch. All Smith Creek products are built guide tough, using rugged materials, and backed by their strong commitment to customer service. This fall, Smith Creek is introducing even more new products, so keep checking their website at smithcreek.co for more information and special offers from now through Christmas.
I think another bad habit, and this may be, it becomes a worse habit the longer you're in fly fishing, But relying on somebody else for your flies is a huge one. And I think way more people than we probably realize actually rely on other people. And that includes just fly shops, you know. Like if you rely on if you rely on a fly shop for your flies, like you're always going to be at a disadvantage to some extent.
So true.
That's a good one.
Tie your own flies.
Yeah, there you go.
The one that I struggled with when I started guiding that I just assumed was like common knowledge was to wear sunglasses when you fish.
Yeah, we talked about this before we started talking. And Matt's like, what? People do this?
Only if it's sunny though, right, Bill?
Yep.
Yeah.
You only need them when it's sunny.
You don't need one $300 pair of really dark sunglasses. You're better off going to Walmart and buying two pair. One is yellow and then one is like a darker.
Yeah.
You know, if it is cloudy, you need a little bit like an amber or a yellow lens. It'll help a lot better than like a really dark sunglasses. But even if they're like, you know, Walmart brand that's like $10, then their yellow polarized sunglasses, they work pretty good.
Yeah, it's the polarization that matters, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be expensive to be polarized. Dude, I'm with you. What you said, maybe a third of the people would show up saying, oh, we don't need sunglasses. I don't know if it's quite that high from what I see, but close. No, lots of times people will say, it's not sunny, so I don't need glasses, right? I'm like, please wear your sunglasses. Even if it only helps 10%, even if you only see into the water 10% more, that's great. Good. You know, any advantage.
And it's not to spot the fish, it's to spot the rocks.
There you go. Right.
Because you're, you know, the rocks are right at your feet and so, or near your feet, hopefully. It's a safety thing too, because being able to see into the water. Yeah, it
helps you wade.
It's going to help you get around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's part of good wading is being able to see in. There are lots of times where maybe I'm walking back to the car and I got to cross the river and I've had my sunglasses down. And then right before I cross the river, I put them up again so that I can see into the river and more safely, more easily wade across. To me, that's one of those deal breakers. Again, these are all things that like you need to do as an angler. Casual angler, beginning angler, okay. Right. But once you're kind of established in the game, like you want to kind of tackle these, let's say, weaknesses. And that one's easy. I mean, tying knots might take a little bit more time, right? Being disciplined enough to change the habit to move your feet more. Those ones are harder to tackle, but this one's easy. Always wear your polarized sunglasses, always. And a hat. Oh, and by that, I mean the hat with a brim, right? Because then that keeps the light off of your sunglasses and your sunglasses work better. You know, you see
what if you turn it around? It helps if you turn it around backwards, right?
That's right. I mean, whatever.
Be nice.
I don't trust, nor would I fish with anyone that doesn't wear a hat.
With fishing. A brim. Yeah.
No, just a hat.
Just a hat.
You look weird if you don't have a hat.
Yeah, you need a hat.
You need a hat.
Yeah. When I was in a bar in college, I had I had like a fitted hat and I was wearing it backwards. And this guy, I was one of those guys. And so this other guy at the bar was like, hey, you know, I would really appreciate it if you would turn that hat around.
No way.
I'll buy you a beer if you turn that hat around. I was like, I'll turn the hat around.
Sure thing.
And so, I got a beer out of it.
You conformed.
I conformed.
Dude, I'd do that for a beer. What's it hurt?
That's what I'm going to do next time I see someone without a hat on. I'm going to go say, hey, you want a broken heels?
I'll give you a broken heels if you just put some kind of hat on, bud. You're fishing. Come on.
You're fishing.
This is fishing.
Oh, that's good.
Another bad habit I see is folks try to force the forehand cast for every situation.
Oh, yeah.
And the ability to cast across your body and make a backhanded cast is so essential to fishing all the water and fishing everything. It the most effective ways possible. When you only have the ability to make a forehand cast and you have a bad angle that doesn't suit yourself for it, you're going to set yourself up for a lot of failure and missed opportunities. Mm-hmm. So get out of the habit of only being able to go one way. Learn to go the other way too.
Yeah, it'll catch you a lot of fish.
It does, right? When I say backhand, people think talking like a tennis racket, like backhand that way. Mm. All we're really doing is taking the hand across your body. Mm-hmm. The hand still stays, let's say, kind of vertical, perpendicular, almost to the water. There's an angle there. Nothing really changes except it comes across your body. That's great for dry fly casting, for nymphing. If I'm fishing left, I'm always going across my body. If I'm fishing to the right, I'm forehand then.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm with you. I was surprised to see so many, again, good anglers forcing that forehand.
Just breaks down.
It does. Yeah. What do you call it, Josh? A three-point turn one time. That was a nice way to
yeah.
put it.
Yeah.
He said it because once you're done with the drift, say you cast upstream, once you're done with the drift and you're trying to force a forehand onto the backhand side,
yeah.
then you have to do a three-point turn, as Josh said. Sometimes it's like a five-point turn to get to your next cast. Yeah, absolutely. And it's inefficient.
And you don't land in contact as much. Like that backhand cast actually lands you right. in much better contact.
Yeah, it puts that rod tip in the right place.
It's very important when you're nymphing. And what I call a lagging curve.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we could do full podcasts on that. A lagging curve with a dry fly is my favorite way to present a dry fly. Instead of an overpowered curve, I like a lagging curve. And anyway, you can't get the proper angle of the curve if you're forcing the forehand over on a backhand side. It's just as simple as bringing it over. It might not be real comfortable at first. Along those same lines, not having a line hand. You guys run into that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, again, critical. You have to be able to do it. You have to be able to strip line and strip it well. Not just like, well, I do it when I have. No, you have to be able to strip line. That's like the thing about fly fishing, right? You got to be able to strip line. And not like, oh, I can't find it all the time. No, that's the new habit. You have to take time to form. You have to be able to reach there and, well, line maintenance, right? And I'll have people
that shoot. Yeah, I was going to say is line management.
Right. I'll have people that right after they shoot line, they're looking down. Where is it? Where is it? Like, And so then I teach them what I call the prayer position, which your line hand doesn't even completely let go of the line. It kind of feeds it into the stripping guide, and then that line hand has it and then feeds it into the trigger finger, which is another thing that you have to have.
Hit that.
Right? Under your trigger finger or your stripping finger, which is on the rod hand. That it's that line maintenance. It has to be there. And you can get by for a long time without being very good at that. But it's a bad habit. It really is. Again, I see good anglers. I mean it. Anglers who have a lot of good things going on, but they don't use a trigger finger. They'll go from, this bugs me a lot, to be honest. They'll go from the stripping guide then to their line hand. You know, not under the trigger finger as they're drifting. And there's a bunch of good reasons for always having it under your trigger finger. Not locked down, but like gliding under your trigger finger as you're stripping, as you recover a line. Fish eats, lock your finger down, strip, you know, set, and then you can strip multiple times. There's a lot of good reasons for it.
I see the line hand thing that you said, but I also see if someone's fishing with no slack or no extra line out and it's just tight to the reel and they're doing the tight line drift, they don't use the trigger finger there, and they'll just set right into the drag of the reel, and that's all you have to really make the force to set the hook in that situation. That's a bad habit, too.
It is, but like it works, right? And even the other thing that what I was talking about, it works. And I think that's why people will do it for so long. Again, become good anglers. And it works, but it's still a bad habit, and it's something
to a point,
that I think we're agreeing that it needs to change. Like, change it, because it will help you in the future. I think all of these things work. You're still going to catch fish, even if you don't move around. Like Josh said, you need to move, right? And you'll get to catch fish even if it takes you five times as long as it should to tie knots. All these things kind of work, but again, I call them deal breakers. It's like, you can't make a good argument that you don't need a stripping finger, or what I call a trigger finger. Like, tell me why you don't need it, you know? Can anybody tell me why you don't need a stripping finger?
You don't want to catch more fish.
That might be why, right?
You want bad habits.
Yeah. That's kind of where we're going with all this. Nobody's going to say, well, it doesn't matter if you take five times as long to tie those knots. Of course it does. We'd all like to tie fast knots.
Yeah. So here's a bad habit I see friends make more so than clients, because most of the time I'm choosing flies for clients when they're fishing. Yeah. But I feel like some of the folks I fish with don't rotate through flies strategically enough when they're out on the water, and they tend to just kind of maybe get lazy and fish what worked last week or the week before, maybe what worked the year before in that particular stream. And they don't have like and I'm not talking about a lot of flies. I'm talking about like five key flies, right?
Sure.
Maybe a caddis larva, mayfly nymph, stonefly, soft tackle, and understanding that there could be You know, especially when we get into our peak season, you know, March, April, May, even June, July, August. I mean, there's a lot of different bugs out there hatching. And a quick change of that pattern, you know, has sparked stuff for me on numerous occasions, right? And really it's five, six flies, but you got to be efficient and understand when to do it, when to make the change and not just get into the bad habit of covering. Like we've talked about sometimes going to the money holes and covering a lot of water. Mm-hmm. That could be a bad habit sometimes if you're not changing flies, right? Because you could be passing over a lot of fish and you're not fishing the right imitations at that time of year. So like to me, I see that a lot, and that's a bad habit some of my close friends have.
I like what you said. You don't have to go through 100 patterns in a day. You don't need to go through 20 patterns in a day. You can have those five key patterns. That's a good way to look at it. And just keep rotating. And for a reason, though. You know, if you see an olive hatch, or a pseudo-cleon hatch, maybe.
Hey, now.
Pseudo-cleon.
Maybe you're going to throw a little soft tackle up on a tag, you know, if you're nymphing. Or drop it below a dry fly.
Sure. Yep.
Have a reason that you're making the change, and then just don't get complacent. Like, oh, this always works. No, it isn't working today. You know, definitely a bad habit to just rely too much, perhaps, on just that one confidence fly.
Right.
Even the trout bitten superfly can't catch them all the time.
No,
that's what I heard.
A lot of times.
That's not true.
Sometimes I just try not to use it because I don't want to catch fish. Try to challenge myself.
Right. Fish fighting has a lot of bad habits associated with it, I think, all the way from not being proactive in your management of the fish and letting it get downstream so that you're in a position where you have to land that fish downstream of your position and put yourself in a position where you are much more likely to lose that fish or break your line. Also, just not getting pressure to the side of a fish, fighting the fish high in the water column, letting him splash around a lot, throw the hook.
Mm-hmm.
It can pretty quickly get out of control.
Yeah. High rod tip.
Right.
Move your feet.
Yeah. Move your feet.
Austin, right. You said this weekend you had to move your feet to keep the fish out of a log jam.
I channeled my inner Bill Dell and chased a nice brown trout out of a log jam.
Tell us about that. Yeah.
Do it. I was fishing this nice skinny run. And I caught a fish or two out of it, and I was just about to move upstream, but I figured I'd, you know, put one or two more casts in and set the hook on a nice brown, and immediately it flies out of the air. And, you know, nothing I could have predicted there. But I saw the size of it. I was like, oh, okay, time to get into gear here. And I just felt it start booking towards the bank, and on the far bank is all this entanglement of debris and logs and stuff, and I knew it. It's like, I can't turn the fish. At first, I tried to turn it on my own and not have to go after it. But then I just thought about Bill Dell and said, I'm going to get it.
What would Bill do?
I watched it as it kept trying to run into the bank. I stripped line in and ran right at it. And sure enough, it turned, and I got the net underneath it and luckily had it. So
that's awesome.
It worked out.
Nice.
I think the first time I saw Bill Dell charge down a fish, I was confused as what was happening in front of me, because he set the hook and was like on a dead sprint towards the fish. I'm pretty sure he netted it on the run and followed through like a few yards past the fish.
The legend of Bill Dell. Gross.
Scaring them into his
Look
net.
At that guy.
That's right.
He scares them into submission.
That fat kid's going to step on me. I better get in the net.
I surrender. Okay. All right. Austin, it's a good thing you had a trigger finger, huh?
Yeah.
You were able to strip more than once.
I'd have been smoked.
Yeah, oh, what about this? I don't know if this is a total deal breaker. I guess a couple of these are on the edge a little bit. What you just said about keeping the rod tip high, I don't like to do that. Like most of us agree, we'd rather have side pressure to the side than keep the rod tip high, because it brings the fish up. And I don't want to play the fish on top. They kind of freak out up top. I don't want them to jump, even though it looks cool, I guess. I'd much rather keep them below the water. And
what a jumper.
And look at him jump. But whatever. We have more control, and then the fish will work with us when they're under the water. And so one of these things, I don't know if this one's total deal breaker, but I almost always try to keep any extra line on the reel. I think that's a good habit. I wouldn't say it's a terrible, terrible bad habit if you tend to have a bunch of line that you're not using, that's just like dragging behind you. I'll tell you what, as soon as I have a fish on, I'm trying to get them on the reel as soon as possible. Strip, 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 get control, and then I'm trying to put them on the reel if I have time. And if you're racing toward them, you might not have that kind of time. But bad things happen when you got a line just getting ready to tangle on something. And even when I'm fishing, just when I'm fishing, like if I'm not using that line, it's back on the reel. That's definitely a good habit. I don't know if it's a deal breaker to not do it. Whether it's after a fishing trip or at a backyard fire, you can bet the Trout Bitten crew has a case of New Trail Broken Heels along with us. It's honestly our favorite beer. This hazy IPA is smooth and full-bodied. Hand-selected citra hops lead to notes of bright clementine and juicy ruby red grapefruit. Broken Heels is a keeper. New Trail beer is proudly brewed in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and delivered cold to your favorite craft beer retailer every week. At New Trail, it's not about being the best angler. It's about getting out there. So enjoy nature's moments and reward yourself for a day well fished with New Trail Broken Heels. It's Trout Bitten's favorite beer. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure. Bill, you got something there.
Yeah, we talked about the fishing thin, and I feel like the thinner you fish, the more you have to get that line on a reel because it's going to break quicker with your hand. You don't have the use of the drag. It's not as smooth, I guess is what I'm saying.
And it loves to catch stuff too, right?
Yeah.
Trevor, another one of the things you mentioned, you hit on a bunch of things there about fighting fish. You said you don't want to land them downstream of your position.
For sure. Yeah.
That is a bad habit.
So much that can go wrong when that fish gets below you. And I think we all acknowledge that it is sometimes unavoidable, right? Mm-hmm. Where you may hook that fish below your position, especially if you're fishing with an indicator or with a streamer. Mm-hmm. With a streamer, you're probably roped up a little bit. So you probably have a little more leverage you can play with. But with an indicator, certainly you could end up in a situation where you hook a fish downstream and you don't have the type of tippet that you can really lean into.
Dries, but same thing.
Yeah. And so then it's all about like having that active awareness and having a game plan for what you're going to this goes back to footing again and your footwork. But as soon as you hook that fish downstream, man, I think about it sometimes how unconscious it is for me now. As soon as I hook a fish, I am immediately moving my feet downstream of that fish, trying to circle behind it, trying to get into a position of power so that I don't have to use all of the equipment to leverage myself. I can use the current in my favor and I can position myself so that I can shorten the fight, not tire the fish out, net it safely, and release it quickly. You know, it's a whole series sequence of things that just become unconscious because you practice them. And it's a bad habit to just let the fish happen to you and dictate to you what's going to happen as soon as you hook it. And I reflect on my early years fly fishing and fish that I've lost over those first years because I had no idea what I was doing when I hooked that fish. And 18-inch fish overpowering me because I let them downstream and I was fighting the current and the fish and I wasn't in a good position. And you know, and then you fight them high and then they're rolling around on the surface and you just like cringe thinking about it. But that happens to every new angler who doesn't learn and get taught how to do it better.
I would even say like this 2 weeks ago when I fished, I lost three good fish at the net and it was because they were downstream of me and I had one X on, I was fishing a streamer, but it still comes into play. Like if you're pulling that fish upstream, the current is pushing it, there's a much bigger likelihood of that hook pulling out of the fish. And it happened like three times within a foot of the net with upper teens fish. And it was rough.
Yep. Just the angle's bad. I have a kind of an ongoing series on Trout Pitting called Fighting Big Fish. there's one article called The Last 10 Feet, which is what you guys are talking about. And so even if I have to fight a fish that is downstream of me, and most of the fight is downstream of me, and maybe I can't walk down or I can't get down there quick enough, or I have heavier tippet on and I've brought them up through pretty quick, in that last 10 feet, I'll do everything I can to just switch positions with them. And by then, they're close enough to you, and I can usually swing the rod around so that now the pressure, well, the fish is upstream of me, so then the pressure is just instead of against the fish, it's kind of with the fish, and it's lifting the fish. I always tell people when I'm guiding, I say, hey, once the head is up, keep it up, because they can't swim when their head's out of water. Just once the head is up, keep it up, and then it'll glide right down into your net if he's upstream of you. If not, you're still pulling, you're still pulling. And like Bill said, you got a bad angle, and it wants that fly just is trying to pull out. Really, you're just waiting for the next bad thing to happen. Bad habit. It really is. Don't land them downstream of you. You have to do it once in a while, right? But like your better habit, what you're aiming for is the opposite. So he's upstream of you. And then just coast him right into your net. The river helps you.
Another thing related note is the kind of touching on the hook set itself. I find it to be a bad habit that when you set the hook, if you're setting the hook so that the fly is flying up into the sky above you or behind you, high up into the air every time, you're going to likely get snagged in a lot of trees and brush behind you. So when I set the hook, I like to do a low angle hook set where it's mostly headed straight downstream of me, more parallel with the water than perpendicular to the riverbed. That mitigates a lot of potential tangles and lost time for me on the water.
I like it. I'm going to piggyback on that even more. Not setting the hook enough. It's probably, with the drag-free drift, second on my bad habits list. I think people assume that it's the bottom, whether that's when they're fishing a suspender or a small minute movement in their sighter, and they neglect to not set the hook because they can't feel it. Or, you know, I hear that all the time. And I'm like, that's a bad habit to get into, because you're going to start missing fish. Or, you know, as Bill was talking about that, you know, the streamer situation, which I agree with, you don't want to, you know, let that fish get downstream. But oftentimes, I think people forget that a lot of times this fish get off because you have a bad late hook set. It has nothing to do with side pressure or running down after them. You had a late hook set, man. You just did not embed that hook in its mouth. And it has to do with late strikes. And so bad habit is not setting the hook enough. You got to fix that.
Matt will tell you. You said something.
When you say enough, you mean hard, right? You mean like set it.
No, quick, but not enough. Like some people, like, oh, that was bottom. That was bottom. I can't tell you how many times I hear that. Oh, no, that was bottom. I can tell how that indicator or the suspender reacted. It's bottom.
You said something in there that I did for years, which was wait till you feel it instead of relying on your eyesight, is so much faster.
That's a good one.
You know,
that's a holdover from spin fishing, right? Or from bait fishing, fishing lures and stuff.
Yeah. Well, you rely entirely on feel for that kind of thing. And so if you get used to that, then you naturally carry it into fly fishing. But even with fly fishing, I think it's still natural, like, because your body wants to react once it feels something. And it's not necessarily the case, because there's a little bit of, you can be unsure if you see the indicator bounce or something, that could be a rock. But if you feel a tug, that couldn't be a rock. And so there's a natural tendency to want to wait till you feel something.
And we are kind of entering that discussion there where people will tell you set on anything. I say that's bad advice. I say set on anything unusual, unexpected. And the longer you fish, the more of a database that you have, a set of expectations. And you go, well, that's unusual. I'm setting. But yeah, you can't set every time that it hits the bottom, Matt. And I know you know, you're not asking people to set every time it touches or it hesitates at all. Well, maybe that's the goal.
Know your bottom. You know your stream.
That's a nice point.
Right?
Yep.
Because you know some of the streams are worse than others when it comes to that tangle. Right. And I tend to find that people don't set enough. And if the conditions are like, okay, look, we just drifted three times through that and your bobber didn't hit. Okay. Like an unusual thing happened the last four freaking drifts. Yep. Set the hook. Don't think it randomly a rock appeared because you made no adjustments. And I don't know, just little things like that.
Mm-hmm. I got one. This might be controversial. I say this is wrong. I find no reason.
Don't be critical.
give me a reason why this makes any sense. But people will cast with the right hand and then switch over and also reel with the right hand. So you got to put your rod in your left hand so that you can reel. And then you got to put it back in your right hand so you can cast again.
No, that don't make sense.
There is nothing I hate watching more than somebody do that. There are a lot of people who do that.
Do you have to have a certain reel for that? Like, don't you have to have a...
How do you mean? No.
Wait.
They'll have the crank on the right side.
You buy the wrong. You buy the wrong reel, basically.
Exactly. No, right. They're all left right, Bill. You know that. You can flip. Are you joking? You can make any rod or any reel easy left right, crank left, crank right. You know.
Yeah. You just switch the retrieve direction.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I've never done it, but I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Oh right.
Then why do? Wait a minute here.
Go ahead.
Why don't?
Here we go.
But fly reels are sold left-handed retrieve, right-handed retrieve,
probably
right?
Just the setting they come with.
Just from out
if
of the
a fly
box.
Shop is, yeah. If a fly
they're
shop,
they're all sold right-handed because the left-handed people have to.
They're special.
Yeah.
What percentage are you really?
Don't worry,
Austin. What percentage of people are left-handed?
I have no idea.
Isn't it like 20%?
I'm left-handed.
I've only guided left-handed. One left-handed person.
There's three of us. Three of you that are left-handed, and we only make fun of one.
I fish right-handed.
Yeah, then you do it.
Oh, come on.
I'm just saying.
Bill, what do you have?
Yeah, I did.
Austin reels with his right hand.
For a while, I think I had three clients in a row that were left-handed at one point. And yeah. I was like, you have the wrong trout bin guide.
That's right. I joked around last week. I told John, I was like, dude, I'm not guiding left-handers anymore. I'm going to have people fill out a piece of paper. It says left-handed. Nope, you're out of here. Nope, can't guide. It does. It kind of screws you up all day. It doesn't have to, but if you're kind of trying to cater toward their strengths and weaknesses, you have to think backwards sometimes.
When I demonstrate stuff, I do it all right-handed, so it
Get
makes
out,
sense.
Really?
And I've
really?
Gotten real good at casting with my right hand now
oh,
because
I can't
of that.
Do that.
If I show them left-handed, it's like way too confusing sometimes, so I just quit doing that.
All right, but seriously, have you seen people do this? They're casting with the right hand.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then they switch it over to the other, you know, so that they can also reel right hand. Their argument is because they can reel faster with that right hand. I don't care about fast. I care about efficiency, right?
I think that's another carryover from spin fishing, too. That's more common, I think, in the salt spin fishing world. I'm not saying it's common in any of it, but I think that's
where they
want to
reel
the originated.
Fastest, with their dominant hand still.
Yeah, the idea is that your dominant hand is your strongest. So if you're casting with your strongest hand, that they also want to reel with that strong hand too. That's the theory.
It's a definite thing in musky fishing because of the big, like the heavier weights, the bigger rods. And it was very awkward for me to get used to when I was fishing musky gear.
You're talking about
because
gear, not fly fishing.
Right.
Okay.
And so it's thought of in that, like, your dominant hand is what you're reeling with.
So you did that, Bill, when you fished musky?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. You can.
Like with a gear rod.
I've probably had five people do this when I'm guiding. I'm like, oh, it just. I've talked to each of them about it.
I feel like that's a bad habit. If the arbor was big enough or something, it would matter. I mean.
To retrieve faster. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it can't be that big a deal.
No.
Yeah, you just get used to it.
Unless you're incredibly uncoordinated.
Well, I'll be rude and I'll say it's laziness. The person never got used to it. They're like, well, this is uncomfortable reel with
the
other hand.
I wonder if it's something in salt.
It's laziness. Like knot tying skills. What's that, Bill?
Like something in salt where you're fighting a fish and it's bigger and that reel might matter more. I wonder if it matters at all there.
Yeah,
I don't fish like, you know, for tarpon or any of that, like big saltwater species where maybe it would affect it.
Well, I could say, if it's a speed thing, I can guarantee you I can actually reel faster with my left hand, which is my non-dominant hand, because I've done it so long. Because early on, I was like, okay, I have to be able to use both hands. It's like a drummer drumming with one hand. It makes no sense.
The drummer from Death Leopard.
That's right. Now, he was forced into it. Now, is it a car accident? Don't make fun of him.
Bill Dale just made fun of him.
He's, you know.
You've never heard the Bloodhound Gang song?
No.
All right, this is getting too deep.
You can Google that on your off time.
Anyway.
This is almost as bad as tying flies backwards. You ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Make raps towards themselves instead
not
of a way.
Not a deal breaker, but very odd. It's just very odd.
Just a different way of getting to the same place. Bad. I don't it understand does get
you,
that.
Here's the thing, though. Austin, that's a good point. It does get you to the same place. I would not say that. That's not even a bad habit. It's just odd. It's you just, know, like yeah. you're saying, instead of rapping forward, you're rapping towards you, over the top and toward you. Very strange. Very strange. Mm-hmm. Hard to watch.
It's like walking on your hands.
It doesn't tie worse flies. But, oh, man, reeling with your casting hand, that's going to hurt you in the end. At some point, you're going to go, I lost a fish because I'm that back and forth, you're going to lose the biggest fish of your life. Put it that way. You can tell that one bugs me, huh?
Let's go back to the cast.
Yeah.
I see two things in the cast, in addition to what we said already. One is not waiting long enough to move forward on the forward cast.
Yep.
And then the second one is doing the complete opposite, is waiting too long to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen some folks who will pause so long on the back cast that the flies actually start to drop towards the water and then move forward.
The rod's not flexing then, you know?
Yeah.
It's already recovered.
So, a nice balance there. But if you're waiting too long, or if you're getting tangled because you're moving forward too fast, you know, figure that out.
Have better habits.
Figure that out.
The other casting one, this is the, I think one of the things that's most consequential is when you're reaching. Most casting instructors will have you make sure you keep your elbow in, right? Now, if you're trying to cast the whole fly line, that's totally different. Honestly, I think that teaches people bad habits. People maybe new to fly casting or interested in fly casting, they'll see, if you look it up, you always see people trying to cast the whole fly line. And we talk about, you know, your best opportunities being within 30 feet. If you're casting 30 feet, then just keep your elbow in. Almost every fly casting instructor will teach you that. Elbow in, good things happen. Elbow out, you start to reach. And I tell people, if your shoulder's hurting, you're doing it wrong. Really, your shoulder shouldn't hurt. There should be almost no load on your shoulder all day long. There are some situations, yes, when we're opening up loops and things. But even then, your shoulder shouldn't hurt, but it might move a little bit.
Yeah.
That's all. Reaching is really bad form. And I think that's the worst and probably the most frequent bad habit that I see in casting.
Yeah.
And drifting too. You don't need to reach out while you're drifting. You don't.
It's going to wear your arm out.
It'll wear your arm
very
out.
Very quickly.
For sure. And it often does bad things to the drift. You might be thinking you're holding more line off the water. And you could be. But you're not setting yourself up for the best hook set, I would argue. And you're certainly not setting yourself up for the next good cast.
And your drift could be destabilized because your arm is destabilized. Right.
That's a really good point. Things start shaking out there. Keep that elbow in almost against your body, really. Things are much more stable. Good point.
Well, and I would argue, I don't know, I might push back against that a tiny bit. Here's what I'm going to say. And just for argument's sake, I'd say that situationally, there are times where extending your arm really does provide you with an angle or leverage to get into a particular spot that you may not be able to wade into. But I think the problem that I see is that many guys extend their arm and hold it straight out in front of them when all they have to do is close the gap in position, and they wouldn't have to be, you know, like do that. But I still feel like there are situations on the water and certain streams where, yeah, you can't wade any farther than this. And there is that far seam, and to get a really good drift there and to hold, you know, you do need to hold a little more line off the water. There might be a situation where it's like, yeah, putting your arm straight out in front of you extends your rod by 2 feet, and that's the best of your limited options. But I 100% agree with you. The tight line image that everybody has in their mind is a guy standing with his arms straight out up in the air, yeah, right?
It's terrible.
And it's on the front of so many books.
Terrible.
And videos on, you know, you
God, I hate
can
it.
Go on YouTube.
That's why everybody does it. There's a couple people that started the whole damn thing, and that's why everybody does it. I mean, it's a bad habit that everybody got into because of a couple people doing it wrong because a camera was on them. That's what I mean it.
Right.
I'm with you. Everything's situational,
it's all right? Situational.
But even if I'm fishing dries and I want to get a certain mend, you know, and I'm going to push out into, do what I call a push mend, and I'm going to reach out into that and maybe even hold my arm out.
Sure.
Just a couple seconds.
Sure.
And then I bring it back in for the next cast. If your baseline, though, is reaching, you're in trouble.
100%. It'll That's a good you. Way to put it. The baseline, yeah, for sure.
To tie the best flies, you need the best materials. With decades of commercial fly tying experience, Fooling Mill understands what it takes to tie a great fly. Over the past several years, they've worked hard to source and prepare a range of fly tying materials that will elevate your experience at the Vice. Fooling Mill fly tying materials have arrived with a range of over 1,400 products. You'll find the staples like marabou, bucktail, and rabbit zonker strips. You'll also find CDC, stripped peacock quills, 12 dubbing ranges, synthetics, chenilles, yarns, and wools. All Fooling Mill materials come in an extensive range of colors that are consistently dyed. So what you receive from them tomorrow will be the same color next year. Their materials go through a rigorous quality control process, so before they're packaged and shipped out, you can be sure they're up to the highest quality standards. Ask for Fooling Mill fly tying materials at your local dealer, or find them online at foolingmill.com.
One thing we were talking about, like wading and moving around, definitely like put some traction in your boots. Doesn't matter if they're felt or if they're rubber. I would even go as far as like the wading staff. Like it makes a huge difference. Speaking from someone who has a bad back, like the traction on my feet and the wading staff make a huge difference. And it extends my time on the water for a day because I'm not slipping and jarring my back, jarring my hips. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a big difference. And I don't know if this is just in other rivers. Matt, do you think the rivers out west are easier to wade than the ones back here? Or do you think it's kind of
no
about the same?
Well, you got pushier water more often, heavier flows. But what about the actual
cobblestone? Like,
are they slippery?
Cobblestone can be bad in places. Yeah, I've had just as bad, Bill. I think it's situational. Some streams are easier, some streams are worse. I don't know. I mean, there's a couple back there that I'm like, man, they're brutal to wade, but there's some like that out here too.
Mm-hmm. It is situational. So you got to have whatever. You don't want to get complacent about it, right? You don't want to say, well, that river's just hard to wade. It doesn't have to be.
No.
Like you said, Bill, wading staff, boot studs.
And I switch it up.
Yeah.
I felt for some.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the worst ones, I take felt.
Dude, I had tungsten carbide tips out there on granite. That was a bad mix.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
No.
I took the tungsten studs out, and I just went with rubber soles. That was on one of your favorite rivers. And I was like, oh, that works. Just rubber soles. That worked well.
Right.
Flows were still heavy.
Got to change.
Don't be complacent about anything. Right?
It's a bad habit, right?
That's right. That's it.
No.
Complacency.
Just look it up. Figure it out. You know, I think that's overall, like, all of this kind of leads to don't accept a bad result. If you enjoy fishing, spend the time to figure out what's going to make it more enjoyable. Whether it's wading, whether it's fishing, whether it's casting, all of it you kind of have to tinker with. There's plenty of resources out there. Troutbitten's a great one. You can, you know, Google things. You can look on YouTube. There's a lot of other people that have solutions out there to make your day more enjoyable.
Yeah, if something's difficult and it's not working, there's a good reason, you know. There's usually a reason that you can figure it out, or ask a buddy to watch you. Hey, why do I suck right now?
The suck factor is real.
Yeah, what I have two people. Austin, you and I talked about this not too long. I had two guys, and one was catching fish and the other wasn't. And it was kind of the reverse of what they both would expect, you know. And I was like, well, same flies, very, very similar water, sometimes the same water. And he, you know, your buddy's doing things just a little more deliberately or accurately, for sure. And there were a couple things like laying the rod down and reaching and things like that, and stretching, you know, pushing the distance. And, you know, we talked through them and whatnot, but it's really good sometimes. We would walk past his buddy and I'd say, well, look, you know, he's kind of sticking the landing right there, what I call sticking the landing. And then right away, he has that contact. The first thing you brought up, Austin, like he has it. And like, you're kind of struggling there, I was telling him, you know, because you don't have it right away. You don't have time to correct it. And it is. It's good to watch your buddy or have your buddy watch you. If it's not working, there's a reason, right? Anything else? What did we miss, guys?
Just a quick bad habit is blaming the weather, the conditions, on the lack of fish you're catching. I hear that often.
It's an excuse, and
Most times that's not the case. It's sunny. Oh shit!
Catch those dumb rainbows if it's sunny.
Yeah, we don't have those dumb rainbows out here, Matt.
Hey, now
we got to earn our brown trout.
Yeah, it's sunny. We don't fish. Though. We just don't fish when it's sunny.
We have brookies.
You don't fish.
We go brookie fishing.
No, we just stay home. No sense fishing.
Another thing on wading through good water in order to get to other good water.
Oh, yeah.
So fish what you have in front of you before you work your way into the prime or what may appear to be the most prime stuff. Because I'll tell you what, how many good fish do we catch in some of that most nondescript water, kind of on the borders of the juiciest looking stuff? So don't rush through. At least put a couple drifts in front of you before taking those next steps.
Oh, yeah. Last time I was out, I was catching more fish out of the seawater.
Yeah.
Than I was any of the A and B stuff. They were just in that.
Yeah, love that.
And that doesn't mean you have to spend a lot of time in the B and C stuff, or what I call secondary, whatever. But there's spend some time in it until, man, they're just, just everything's banging in the shallow riffle. I'm going to fish the stuff on the way to the shallow riffle.
Let's say 80 or 90% of the fish may be feeding in a certain water type. That doesn't mean the biggest fish of the day is going to be in that same water type.
And that's what you're looking for, Bill, is the big one.
That's right.
And you don't want to lose them either. You don't want to snap them off.
I don't want to snap them off with a damn three weight.
I think I have one more. I think it all, when we're talking about casting, for me, it all comes down to turnover. We had a full podcast on casting principles, why it all comes down to why casting matters most. That was maybe season three. And I say every cast needs to turn over. That's what good fly casting really is. Everything should turn over in the air, not finish turning over on the water. Now, of course, again, there are situational exceptions. But for the most part, everything should turn over in the air, and then it goes down in the water. If you have a dry fly, everything should turn over, and then in most cases, then the line is going to hit first, and then probably the leader, because the line's heavier, and then the leader, and then dry fly is probably the lightest thing. And so quite often, your dry fly will land last. You can force almost a tuck cast on a dry fly and actually change that. But that doesn't matter. My point is everything should turn over in the air. And then you have the choice about how everything lands. That is absolutely true on a dry fly. It's true for sure on a nymph. And I don't care what way you're nymphing, whether it's tight line or to an indie. I mean, everything should turn over in the air. And in this case, the weight or the fly goes in first. And then you get to choose where everything else goes. I'm telling you, again, good anglers I will meet that never have even thought that through. But if everything's kind of rolling out, and I call it, it's usually a lob instead of a cast, and everything's kind of unfolding then on the water. Basically, that is a lazy cast where everything's, the turnover is completing as it's rolling onto the water. Most times, that's a bad habit. That's a bad cast.
I'll say it for streamer fishing, too. I don't know if you said that.
I agree.
But it's
turnover.
Huge being able to stick that landing and let it sit in that soft bankside seam that's 20 feet away is a game changer.
I do that with a sinking line. I want full turnover, and then everything can go in.
Yeah.
All fly casting, for me, all good fly casting starts with turnover. And that's easily missed and becomes a bad habit where you're like, well, I got it over there. How did it go over there? That's where real accuracy of everything comes from. that's a key thing for me.
Maybe it's accuracy kind of leads into that too. It's just except like I've met a lot of good anglers that are intimidated by a log or an overhanging tree, especially if it's only 2 feet deep or a foot and a half deep over there. If you don't practice it and you don't attempt that, it's never going to be part of your game. Like, just get yourself out of that comfort zone and say, okay, I'm going to cast and work my way into that log because there's a good chance there could be a nice fish on it or any fish on it.
I've told you guys before, I get people from certain regions and I can kind of generalize, you know, again, people's rivers teach them to fish certain ways. And so certain regions I get where people think they're accurate. I'm a pretty accurate fly caster, they'll tell me. And then when we get around some overhanging limbs and that log over on the side and we need to get close to it, they're like 5 feet from it. And they're like, okay, I fished that. I'm like, no, we got to get closer. We don't, it's got to be closer than that. And then they realize that their accuracy isn't quite what they thought it was. Like within 5 feet, that's not really accurate enough. We'd love to be within 5 inches over and over. You know, within that same spot, within maybe 5 inches, maybe closer than that. I don't know, maybe tighter target than that. And so it's a bad habit to kind of get complacent about, like, I'm really accurate. You're probably not. None of us are, you know, as accurate as we need to be, really.
Yeah.
And I've brought it up before. When that one time you and I were floating, you're like, why aren't you getting close to the bank? I'm like, I'm getting close to the bank. And I was like a foot away. You're like, no, you got to get close to the bank. Why I'm catching fish and you're not. That's what he pretty much told me. And he was right. You know, I got complacent about thinking, well, I'm accurate. No, I was safe. I was safe, you know, instead of accurate.
Live dangerously.
There you go.
Loose flies, catch big fish.
Is that it? Look, Austin.
Oh, my God.
He mailed it in.
That's it. I'm out.
I'm out.
He's taking a nap.
Okay, Matt Grobe from Montana. Will you read us out?
Of course. Remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers. The Trout Bitten website hosts over 1,000 articles with endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and tags too. Be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel. Now featuring the Trout Bitten Tip Series, the Fish and Film Series, and the Trout Bitten Fly Box, all in collaboration with Wilds Media. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment because that really helps. Till next time, friends, kick your bad habits. Fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Trying to be creative.
This guy just taking liberties now.
Very nice. It's a slooper next week.
Trust, nor would I fish with anyone that doesn't wear a hat.
It's bad.
You look weird if you don't have a hat.
You're fishing.
You need a hat.
This is fishing.
Oh, that's good.